You're listening to The Real Short Box, a comic book podcast made for geeks by geeks.
Hello, everybody out there in podcast land. Thank you for tuning in and listening to The Real Short Box. My name is Donald, and I am here with a very special guest, one comic book fan and writer, Mr. Nathan Camp. Nathan, thank you for being on.
Hey, my pleasure.
Yeah, I'm really excited to have you on. You're another one of our core group of people that is part of this little comic book world that we've kind of created. I would call it more of a shelter from the vileness of Facebook in general. And it's been a real pleasure getting to know, you know, a little bit about you and your personality just through your posts and things, as well with a host of the other guys that are part of that group and girls.
Oh, yeah. No, we've got a pretty great group. I mean, there was a lot of resistance at first, but it seems like they finally come around to understanding that Batroc is definitely, without a doubt, one of the top five martial artists in the Marvel Universe. And there, on that, there will be no discussion or debate.
You know what? I'm not going to argue it. I did accidentally buy his first appearance, and I didn't even know I did. It's actually the same book as Sharon Carter's first appearance, I believe.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So, it was an accidental purchase, but I own it now. So, I'm super happy that, he was even in the MCU and that he got to come back, for the Falcon and the Winter Soldier. That was super cool.
Oh, yeah. I mean, hey, the more of him, the better. If only he could have gotten that super soldier serum, and then we would have quickly just renamed the show Batroc. No way they could have taken him. No question.
Right.
But, you know.
No, you're probably right. If he had the super soldier serum, that'd be a lot of trouble.
Yeah.
And I don't think that that's the trouble they wanted to create. Instead, they did John Walker, who is, he's probably my second or third favorite character in the Marvel Universe period.
Wow.
Not so much the MCU, Marvel Cinematic Universe, but just in the Marvel Universe in general, I love him. Love his character.
I thought I hitched my cart to the wrong horse, but to hear you say that John Walker is one of your top three Marvel characters has really, like, oh, okay, no, in comparison, wow.
Yeah.
Good
See?
Lord.
You don't feel bad because your guy knows who he is, at least,
yeah.
You know, there's that. My guy has no, he still ultimately thinks he's like the best and greatest hero ever known to man, and he really isn't.
He kind of has that, like, Johnny Cage element about him, where, you know, it's like, you think you're a much bigger deal than the rest of the universe has accepted, and that always gets a rise out of me.
Yeah, that's a really good analogy. I would have said Jack Burton instinctually, but Johnny Cage is also a very good choice.
Oh, yeah, you know, different decades, probably.
Yeah, one's 80s, one's 90s. I think that's pretty much it. We're just about 10 years off, I'd say. Maybe less.
Yeah.
But anyway, to get back on track, we are talking about today something really super cool. I don't think that we've talked about before. We're talking about new incarnations, reiterations of characters that kind of reinvigorated and revamped them and kind of gave a new story for the character or a new costume, a new look, something that really just made people stand up and take notice and go, wow. And that's what we're going to be talking about today. And I'm super excited about that. It's one that that you brought to the table. And I was like, yes, let's absolutely do that. So I've been thinking about it long and hard. And I have a little list myself. But I figure we'll let you get the ball rolling. And just right out of the gate, mention something that really excited you.
Okay. So, I mean, I also have quite the list. But to start it off, I wanted to go with something that's a bit unusual that people do forget. I wanted to start off with Blade from the movies. How Blade from the movies retroactively, like, entirely changed the character. Everybody kind of all of a sudden went like, oh, yeah, this character is cool. Yeah, he doesn't have to be like this weird 70s, like, Afro-wearing vampire hunter that occasionally shows up. He's, you know, just from the strength of Wesley Snipes' performance, the aesthetic qualities, all of a sudden the, you know, Marvel, you know, comics incarnation took, you know, the same sort of lead and was like, oh, I got to follow in this mold. This is what people want, is kind of knockoffs of the Matrix.
Yeah, yeah. It really did. It reinvigorated Snipes' career also, and the character. And you're right. He was seen kind of like a, almost a joke in a way. And that is a lot to do with his look. You know, he was still very much stuck in the 70s. He was a product of his time. And I don't think they actually knew what to do with the character or even cared at the time, which is really surprising because now he's a, I would say, at the very least, a B-level character. He's.
He's on the main Avengers team right now. So right. That's kind of hard to argue with.
You know? Yeah, you can't argue with an Avenger. I mean, and diving in really quickly, my favorite Avenger of all time and my favorite probably Marvel character would be the Black Knight.
Oh, okay.
And he's one that's gotten some updates throughout time. Just an overall look, you know, he's changed his costume here and there, which is great. I mean, you know, but I think that they've learned sometimes you learn that like classics remain classics for a reason.
Yeah.
I don't know how you've thought about when they took away Superman's red tights on the outside.
The new 52 was very questionable, sometimes interesting, but very questionable was most of the new 52, you know, saga. I feel like almost everything having to do with Grant Morrison's version of Young Superman should have just been its own continuity, because I know that created problems. It's like, there was a book about Young... Yeah. There was Young Superman at one time, and there's like a book set essentially 5 or so years in the future that's our modern-day Superman. And it was like, just have one of these not be canon. Because it made... I know one of the guys quit the book, the like modern-day Superman book, immediately, because he's like, I don't understand how these two characters are supposed to be the same. It's like same thing for All-Star Superman, All-Star Batman. Like Grant Morrison was like, yeah, my character has nothing to do with whatever Frank Miller's doing. Keep him away from that.
Yeah, yeah. Morrison, he most recently tried to revamp the Green Lantern universe and I think ultimately fell on his face. I could be wrong. I read the first 3 or 4 issues of his that newest run that he was doing. And just could not get into it at all. Like right out of the bat, like right out of the gate, it was just really bad. Like I just didn't understand it. Like they were trying to make him like he was set up and then, but it, like he straight up killed a dude. And I don't know if they explained it later, but it just does. I don't like mysteries that take too long to figure out, especially when you're waiting months.
Oh, I feel like you're in a real bad spot then if you're a DC fan, because I feel like that's been like the DC go-to since like the Identity Crisis is, hey, here's a mystery subplot. Hey, these characters have been murdered. You know, what happened to them? You know, like they love their murdery subplots.
You're absolutely right. I've gone to the point where like when it's a miniseries like that, I don't read it. I'll collect the individual issues. And then 6 or 12 months later, whenever it's finished, then I'll read the whole thing all the way through. What really pained me was that, I don't want to call it stupid, but it was dumb how long it took. It was the Doomsday Clock with Geoff Johns.
Oh, yeah, that went forever.
Good Lord.
I mean, do we really need the Watchmen and DC universes to be connected? Does that benefit anybody? I didn't think so, but I mean, no. There were certainly people who, you know, I mean, everyone had the original, like, kind of like, okay, I guess it'd be kind of cool to see Dr. Manhattan and Superman meeting, but then it was like, oh yeah, who's gonna win in a fight? And it's like, what are we talking about? What's at scale? What's at stake between these two characters?
Right. The best scenario you could have would be Captain Atom in Dr. Manhattan, because that's who Dr. Manhattan is based off of, for those that don't know, because, Alan Moore wanted to do the Charleston characters. He wanted to do those characters, and DC initially said, yeah, okay. But then when they realized that they had potential to use these characters, like, and then that Moore was going to kill some of them off, possibly, and kind of sully their reputation, so to speak, they were like, oh, no, we can't do that. And they took their word back, and then Alan was like, okay, well, I'll just make these new characters, just base them all on the Charlton characters and just go from there. And that's exactly what he did. I mean, Night Owl is Blue Beetle. What was it?
I think the comedian's supposed to be Peacemaker.
Yeah. Peacemaker.
Rorschach, obviously, Question.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, it was... I think it's usually fine to take things and just put them out of continuity. I think people sometimes try and force everything together, and I just, you know, that doesn't necessarily appeal to me. I would have been fine if Miles Morales never joined the, like, 616 universe.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. I'm not opposed to that one, but I'm also like, it didn't have to happen. Yeah. And I remember when they were like, oh yeah, we're going to kill Peter Parker off in the Ultimate Universe. And I was like, no way. Like, that's insane. So I had to buy that issue, of course, you know, and that's how they spiked their sales there. And then they're like, okay, now we're going to introduce this new character. And it's all Bendis. Brian Michael Bendis yep. has been doing these things. But I never followed him enough to know how often he repeated his cycle.
Mm-hmm.
Who I did follow enough to notice was Jason Aaron.
Oh, yeah, Jason Aaron's got his little, like, quirks. He loves his, yep. like, dad tales. He did twice. Oh, man, that was annoying. So with both the character of Fat Cobra, which was a dry run, and then eventually with Wolverine, he had this thing where they had just lived around and hoarded out for so many centuries that they had to, like, ended up fighting and killing all of their, like, 50-plus offspring unknowingly. And he did that originally with Fat Cobra as, like, a one issue. And he's like, oh, I think I like that idea. And so he made that an arc in his Wolverine ongoing, was him fighting this evil group that set all of his kids after him. And then, you know, him finding out, like, oh, geez, I just committed infanticide. Awesome.
Yep. And he also had a really good story with Thor, where he had the God Killer character.
Oh, yep.
Basically wanted to eliminate all of the gods because he was tired of their rule and didn't like how they acted, thought they were arrogant, et cetera, et cetera. And he did that for Thor. And then, like, a couple years later, he wrote Doctor Strange, where there was a character that was eliminating all the magical characters, all the characters that possess magical abilities, because yep. they didn't like it and they thought it should be science-based and blah, 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 blah. And I was like, really? You're just telling the exact same story over, just switching out some of the characters, and you expected people not to notice. Okay.
That was, you know, because you have your guys who, like, that bothers you with, and other ones where you're like, oh, I like when I see this. You know, like, I think I first noticed that with, like, Scott Snyder. Scott Snyder loves his, like, unrelated opening about, like, hey, you know, I love circuses. My dad and I went to the circus. And it's like, okay, anyway, so here's the beginning of Court of Owls, and it's going to involve the circus. And he loves doing that, like, you know, hey, I'm going to tell you a story, and then it actually is the opener for, you know, what will be a 12-issue page epic about the real history of Gotham.
Yeah.
Like, oh, God.
Yeah. Yeah, you're exactly correct. What did you think about the what was it? It was Geoff Johns. He revamped, I want to say Captain Marvel.
Oh, yeah, he did that recently as well.
Now
yeah.
I have to say Shazam.
Correct.
What are your thoughts on that?
I never got around to reading it. The only story with Shazam that I, like, you know, outside of Kingdom Come, that I remember really enjoying was him versus the Monster Men. God, I really wish I could remember the writer on that. Let me see if I can find that. But that's about the only Shazam story to which I had any affection. So the idea of, like, redoing the character didn't really hold much weight with me.
Yeah. They basically, the movie took a lot of what Johns had written, as far as, like, the idea of adding more to the family of Shazam characters. Mm. So basically they were like, okay, so let's add in, we always had Mary and Freddie, which was Mary Marvel and Captain Marvel Jr. But then they wanted to add Pedro, Eugene, and Darla to the Shazam family. And they also wanted to name the character after Shazam and finally shed DC's pride. So originally what happened was Fawcett Comics created Captain Marvel, which is now called Shazam. That's this Billy Batson. And so when DC purchased Fawcett, they basically sued Fawcett Comics into obscurity. So, like, they said that Billy Batson, Shazam, Captain Marvel was basically too much like Superman. And the courts agreed. And so after being tied up for so long, I think Fawcett was just tired and old. And they were like, okay, let's just sell. So they sold their characters to DC Comics. And DC acquired all of these new characters. But what they forgot to do was acquire the rights to the names still. So when the name on Captain Marvel lapsed, Marvel Comics snuck in and purchased the rights to that name. Henceforth, then they were able to create their character, Mar-Vell, a.k.a. Captain Marvel. And the name of Captain Marvel, Marvel Comics is never going to let go of. Why would they? They're called Marvel Comics. It just makes sense. So DC ran into this problem where, oh no, we can't call Captain Marvel Captain Marvel on the covers anymore. We can call them that inside the comic in the pages. So they started naming them like the Power of Shazam, the Trials of Shazam, you know, things like that. That was clever and had Captain Marvel on the cover, but then, you know, the title was just Shazam. So finally, like in what, 2018 or something like that, 2017? They said, okay, enough's enough. We're just going to call him Shazam from now on, named after the wizard. That's it. We're done.
Yeah, with the introduction of the movies and everything, it was like, you know, it's a losing battle. And for the record, the one I was thinking of was Shazam in the Monster Society of Evil by Jeff Smith, who also wrote A Bone Fame. Yeah, that was what I was trying to remember. I always think of that because it has that famous meme panel of like, oh no, Shazam's coming, quick, eat the children with the alligator people. like yeah. Oh, we're about to lose. We might as well eat all these children on the way out. If we have to lose, we might as well make sure a lot of people have no kids anymore.
I remember that. That was a really fun, it was like a mini-series, like a prestige format, three-parter or something, correct?
Correct, yeah. It was, I remember I had it in paperback. I don't remember much else outside of it. That's okay. The only real attachment I had to the character outside of Kingdom Come.
Yeah, but, well, know, he was badass in Kingdom Come. That's another revamp of that character. They made him kind of evil, you know? They made him a bad guy.
Yeah, it was, it started that great, like, line and tradition of, like, okay, hey, what can we do with Superman? Well, do we have kryptonite? No. Okay, well, we got to give him a secondary thing here, guys, because this is just nonsense. Like, we can only find these rocks often. Oh, what if it's like he can't deal with magic? All right, yeah, it works good. Yeah, that's fine enough for me.
Yeah, yeah. And it works out to a point. I remember when they first came out with Smallville on television, and every baddie that he would fight pretty much every week, like the villain of the week, was created due to the kryptonite or the meteor rocks, as they like to call them, that fell to Earth when Superman fell to Earth as well as a baby. And that got old so fast. I didn't even make it through the first season. I just gave up. I was like, I'm done.
Oh, okay. Sorry. I am sorry this podcast has taken a detour into obscure comic trivia, but a big thing about that was the whole character of Superboy Prime, and how at the time there was the problem with I guess DC and the owners of the Superman license, whose names for whatever reason I cannot currently remember, but they had lost the rights to Superboy as like a title. And so they were in litigation for that. So I remember lots of times that they would be like alluding to characters like Superboy and Superboy Prime and having to like use a placeholder name. And one of the sites I most like commonly followed always called him Tom Welling, for the guy who played Smallville at the time on Smallville, you know, as their Superboy surrogate. Because, yeah, DC did not have claim on the name, but kept wanting to use the characters.
Kind of sad. Yeah, I think they were in litigation with the estate of Jerry Siegel and Joe Shuster for a while, if I recall.
There we are.
It was always back and forth. And actually, I can't remember which one, if it was Jerry Siegel or Joe Shuster. I think it was Siegel, who was alive still at the time. It was Jerry Robinson that stepped in and helped out with the lawyering process, so to speak, to enable older writers like that to get compensation for creating these characters that Marvel or that, well, Marvel true too, but Marvel, DC, Warner Brothers, you know, companies like that continue to reap the benefits from, as these creators just languished in obscurity and basically poverty. So it was a really cool thing that that Jerry Robinson did. And you know, part of the reason why we have the comic book legal defense fund to step up and protect the rights of the creators, which I think is very important.
Oh, definitely. I mean, I also know as part of the, I guess, back to, again, obscure comics trivia, which I'm sure is what people tune in for, is like, oh, can you tell us weird legal cases that happen in these two companies? Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, yeah. was a big part of the reason for the eventual Shazam Superman, legal dispute was that the Shazam character had started to become so much more popular than Superman. And in turn, you saw Superman trying to take ideas from Shazam of like the Marvel family and the extended roster of characters and putting that on Superman. And so it's this weird case of both characters taking and stealing from one another and trying to improve upon the concept. And it was just, really fascinating.
Yeah. Yeah. No, you're right. And you'll see that throughout time when it comes to these characters. Like, for example, when the Batman television series took off, they made the comic books much more campy to emulate the series because of the popularity. So DC, Marvel, they both have a very storied history of reproducing and copying current times. I think one of my favorite issues of Justice League, I think, is issue 1 or 2, if I recall, and they had Snapper Carr in there. And Snapper Carr was like their human sidekick. They're like, I have no power sidekick. And he would be like, oh, man, far out, daddy-o. Peep those orbs. And, that's groovy. And I was like, oh, my God. Like, this is embarrassing. This is so bad now. Back then, I'm sure kids were like, whoa, it's so cool. He talks like me.
I don't think that's true. There's always that, like, ad executive who needs there to be like, we have to have something for the kids, you know. Somebody who's like, fast talking, jive character. And it's like that always, I don't think even at the time those characters were well received, because you always look back and you got your like scrappy dudes or whatever. Just this character that somebody thought would just like, oh, this will reinvigorate the formula. And instead it just, comes off like a wet fart.
Yeah, no, you're right. Yeah, there's a lot of wet farts in the comic book industry for sure. Whether we're talking about characters or creators.
Oh, yeah.
There's a lot of them. Let's go ahead. Do you have another character you wanted to mention?
I mean, very easily off the top of my head, Warren Ellis's take on Moon Knight. When we were talking about wet farts or Brian Bendis's contributions, I remember that up until then, the only time I even remembered the character of Moon Knight until Warren Ellis got his hands on him was the horrible idea that Bendis had where Moon Knight had 3 personalities based off Spider-Man, Wolverine, and Captain America. And I remember just thinking to myself at the time, what a horrible idea that was, like trying to capitalize in on the incredible like success of these other characters and trying to just kind of staple them onto Moon Knight. Like, why would you pick up these 3 other books when instead you could just pick up this, one great Moon Knight book? Like, yeah. Oh, geez.
Yeah, yeah. That's a really awful.
Awful. Yeah, just... Like
I didn't know that, like, to be honest, because I didn't really follow Moon Knight. So, like, I always saw Moon Knight as this even more unhinged Batman, and I was like, I don't know if I need that in my life.
Yeah, it's kind of has been his thing. Marvel's Batman, has always been kind of his niche. But then Ellis took care of the character, and he, gave him all this interesting. Like, he kind of became this 3-pronged aspect of like. There's Mr. Knight, who's like this kind of, business suit detective type. There's like Moon Knight, the like superhero. And then there's like Khonshu's disciple, who's like fighting supernatural entities. And I thought that was a great way to kind of take on the idea of the multiple personalities, but also give him much more of a distinct sense of focus.
Yeah, that's a good idea. What do you think they're going to go that route with the series when it comes out?
I think they'd be stupid not to. I mean, you got to kind of. Anything that doesn't follow like the success of the comics is always just such a bad idea. Like, I mean, WandaVision did a great job of taking the kind of surreal elements of Tom King's work on Vision and working those into a format that it seems like most of America or the world really enjoyed.
Yeah, most.
Yeah.
I was one of those that was like, it's okay. I didn't fall into the I love it, it's so amazing type category. I enjoyed parts, but that beginning was just brutal for me. Just brutal. Mm. Like 3-4 episodes of nonsense. And I just couldn't understand why they would let that happen. And I don't know if it was because budgetary issues. And they were like, we have to have so many episodes. And they're like, well, we don't have it in the budget. And they're like, well, just use these old sets. And they're like, oh, perfect. We can create, episodes around these old sets. And I don't know. Something had to have been like, that's the only thing that my brain will allow me to accept is something had to have already been set up to where they were kind of forced into that. But you never know. Maybe they meant to do it, and if that's so, then okay.
Yeah.
But, you know, overall, though, the end and stuff, they kind of saved themselves, and I did enjoy that, and I was excited, and I was speculating a lot for Mephisto and Nightmare and things like that. None of that, you know, spoilers, none of that really happened the way we wanted it to, but they left the door open for things like that to take place, which is a good thing in my book.
Genuinely cruel of them to have cast Evan Peters and given people hope, like, oh, hey, the X-Men might be coming. Oh, really? Wow, we might be able to adapt these things and get them all in the same coherent universe? Nope.
Nope.
That was a joke. It was a boner joke the whole time. Yep. It was a dick joke that we set up episodes. Yeah, it's the guy's name, Boner. Yeah, just like, wow. It's like, what were we thinking?
Really bad boner joke. Yeah, absolutely. I wanted to quickly mention a few more before we have to wrap this up, but I'll be brief here. I feel like there was just a few Swamp Thing stories that really mattered to me. And of course, you know, you have to go with the Len Wein, Bernie Wrightson stuff that kind of originated it all. That's the old school Swamp Thing we know and love. Then nothing happened, as far as I'm concerned, up until Alan Moore took over. And basically said, and here's how he reinvigorated the character. He said, you know, Swamp Thing is no longer really a human. Swamp Thing is just the conscience of the human mixed with a creation by the swamp itself.
Yep.
And that really kind of blew my mind when I read it. And I only read it about, I would say, 10 years back or so.
Wow.
So I was like, wow, I had no idea that they did that. So nothing then again after Moore's run, it kind of, you know, languished a bit. And then I would say there's probably three or four good things that came out of the New 52. And Swamp Thing was one of them.
Oh, definitely. Animal Man.
Scott Snyder in, what was it? It was Scott Snyder and then Charles Soule?
Yeah, Soule took over, I believe, the Swamp Thing book. And Scott Snyder, I think, was writing at the same time the Animal Man book. I don't remember. There was some crossover.
I think Jeff Lemire was writing Animal Man.
Oh, yes. Okay.
And Scott Snyder was writing Swamp Thing. And Scott Snyder left Swamp Thing. And Soule took over. And it didn't miss a beat as far as I was concerned. It just kept
going.
It was so solid. Such a good. And they were able to tie those two characters in. They created, you know, fleshed out more with the green and what the green really meant. That's like Swamp Thing's domain. And the red being Animal Man's domain, basically meat, you know, and human beings and animals and things that he could control and work with. And then Arcane, who's the ultimate villain for Swamp Thing, they kind of made him an ultimate villain for Animal Man then too.
Being essentially part of the entire DC universe, because they have that, I guess, future story where everybody's been essentially taken over by the rot and, fighting zombies.
Which is basically, just zombified dead meat in a way, you know? And that was a really cool idea. And they had these, like, still these green avatars in the future that were fighting. And one of them was Poison Ivy.
Yeah.
And I thought that was very cool, very clever way to keep her, you know, in the story and in the future. Because she was, you know, part of the last hurrah for Earth for survival of the species of life, so to speak.
Yeah, really. Like, it was so interesting to think of these characters that have always been so niche, and now they were our front and center as like, no, this is what the next big thing is going to be about. This is what is the great peril for the Justice League is, hey, what's going on in these Swamp Thing and Animal Man books is what really matters. Like, wow, what a way to shift your focus.
Yeah, it was very clever. They did a lot. Like, we had our misses, definitely. And in all things Superman in that New 52 was a miss, was a complete miss. And half of Batman was a big success. And then the other half, as far as I'm concerned, was a huge failure because I think Snyder kind of ran out of stories.
Yeah. I mean, pretty much everything after Court of Owls kind of, a lot of people say they really enjoyed Zero Year. I couldn't remember a thing about it, you know?
Yeah, no, it's not good. I didn't like it. It's not, I mean, I'm not the you know, the end all be all of story, you know, acknowledgement, but I just didn't think it was very good. So, and I agree with you there. I think Court of Owls was great, and it gave us some amazing characters. In fact, Talon just made his appearance again in the new Suicide Squad story. Yeah, right. That I think, who's telling that? Is it Higgins?
Could be. I remember there was also a different version of the Talon, or I guess a Court of Owls character in whatever Gail Simone's last Secret Six was. So they've definitely taken the Talon concept and kept running with it, or at least the Court of Owls mythology.
Yeah. And I'm excited to see the James Gunn story of the Suicide Squad and how he kind of, you know, he put in new characters that I don't know that we've ever seen in the Suicide Squad before, but then added some really classic characters that we were wanting, like King Shark, for example.
This works very well because that was two of the people I had on my list. I thought Gail Simone's update to Catman, who I guess is on the Secret Six, which is not necessarily directly related to the Suicide Squad, but they're adjacent. They often have a lot of bleed over. You got Deadshot on both.
Yeah.
I thought Gail Simone's take on Bane as well did a lot for his character. Well, up to that point, was just kind of remembered for this one moment he did something, and ever since he's just either been like kind of relegated to like big muscle, and like he's always just threatening again that I can break the bat twice. I don't have to prove it to you by doing it, but I could if I wanted to.
And right. He's that guy sitting at the table with when you're having drinks, talking shit, and you're like, okay, Bane.
Yeah. He's remembering his high school glory years, and it's like, dude, it's been well over two decades, Bane. Like, you got to do something else. And I thought Gail Simone's take on that was a lot of fun.
Yeah. Yeah, and I really did feel like that version of Bane from Gail Simone, Dave Bautista played that when he played Drax, like, pretty
A little bit
close to it. So I do feel like he could be a really good Bane if they let him play in that universe. And he's excited to do it. He wants to do it. So I'm all in on that.
I'd be for it. I'm trying to think here. Let me just go through my list here. I understand we should probably wrap it up here. Okay. Mr. Sinister by Zeb Wells in the current run of Hellions finally made the character good. The Mr. Sinister character is one of those 90s holdovers that I've hated because I don't know what they do. I don't necessarily love their design. I know they're involved with clones, but they've just been inscrutable. And so kind of defining him down as, it's this very morally evil character who is obsessed with cloning and being a piece of shit, who is also very effeminate, very style conscious, likely bisexual. Great choice. Great way to finally update that character. Deadshot, John Ostrander, obvious, going from this weird magnum-wielding gentleman thief into, you know, mercenary for hire with a family he's fighting for. Great choice. Nick Spencer's run on Superior Foes of Spider-Man. Let's take all these C-listers and give them some depth. Never a bad idea. No. Tom King's Mr. Miracle run completely reinvigorated the New Gods in a way that made them seem more approachable and less like Shakespearean. Good choice. Gwenpool, I debated whether this should really count because there was only really one issue where it wasn't like defined, but Gwenpool by Christopher Hastings and making her this meta observation of the Marvel Universe, but not in the lol random Deadpool way. Fantastic. Matt Fraction's Hawkeye, Immortal Iron Fist by Brubaker, and Scarlet Spoiler by Christopher Yost were all just great takes on the characters that managed to figure out what about this character is interesting, even if they came out of the Clone Saga from the 90s, which is an attempt that, you know, should be applauded in every form.
I think one of my favorite storylines to come out in the last probably 15, 20 years is Avengers Arena.
Great. Yes.
Yeah. And I think that was done by Dennis Hopeless, I think, or
that'd be the case. Let's see.
Loveless. I can't remember his name. But he came up with this idea where he was going to try to reinvigorate characters like Wiccan and Hulkling. And I think his Reptar was another one.
I remember. Yeah. It's like a reptile type person.
Yeah.
Because that came out of the Avengers Academy.
X-23. Another one was Kazmat or something like that. So all these
Kazmat
that really didn't have much to them, much depth or anything that, or you didn't know much about them. They were like, you can use these characters. So we took them and he threw them on an island that Arcade basically created and was using it to generate views. And like, okay, guys, you're on my island. You have to kill each other. And the winner, you know, is the survivor of this, the final survivor. And it just got dark for like Marvel title.
Oh, it's very dark. I mean, obviously heavily influenced by, like, you can't even say heavily influenced. It makes direct homages to Battle Royale. I mean, you know, the idea of young teens put on an island and having to kill one another until there's one left is, you know, inherent drama. Yeah. I mean, especially, I'm assuming at the time they were still running the Hunger Games at the time it came out. So, it, you know, it had that element as well. But yeah, I mean, you know, there's not much like Suicide Squad's kind of and Secret Six. The idea of making characters that you otherwise wouldn't care about expendable somehow immediately grabs your interest because you're like, oh, well, I didn't really care about Polka Dot Man. But now that I know Polka Dot Man might die at the end of this issue, well, okay. You know, that gives me something to hold on to.
Yeah. I love that idea. I don't think there's more of a favorite thing for me than not knowing who's going to die. Having like them create intricate and fun ways to kill these wacky characters that no one really cared about up to that point.
Yeah,
I'm almost 100% positive like that Polka Dot Man is probably going to be one of my favorite DC villains after the Suicide Squad movie. Like, it just looks like it's going to happen.
Good possibility. I mean, you know, I think that's kind of the great thing about the Suicide Squad concept, really, is getting rid of like fodder characters and then seeing if any of them resonate. And then if they do, it's like, oh, they're back to life, or, you know, here's a legacy character. But it's just such a good thresher way of just taking care of, you know, up till then, I think like the only thing you do is like introduce a character like Scourge of the Underworld. And it's like, okay, yeah, like here's 30 C-listers that Scourge of the Underworld has killed that only two people remember the names of.
Yep. Well, Nathan, this was really great. We'll have to do another one of these sometime, probably in the near future. I had a lot of fun with this one. So thank you so much for being on. And I really appreciate all your input. It's been a lot of fun.
Hey, thank you so much. I hope you have a, you know, great day and keep on, you know, remembering these odd bits of comic minutia for the rest of the general population.
I think probably, yeah, when I'm on my deathbed, they'll be like, is that what you want to say? And I'll be like, Polka Dot Man was great. And they'll be like, what? And I'll tell you why. And they'll be like, okay, sit down.
Yeah, let's just unplug it. Yeah, right. It's fine. Yeah, send him to the great beyond.
Exactly, yeah. Bye, Grandpa.
Yeah, see ya.
He's talking nonsense. He's out. Yeah. But again, thank you so much. And thank you to the audience for listening in. We very much appreciate that. We do a live podcast almost every Monday. It's at 7:30 p.m. Pacific time on the Rumblespoon Productions YouTube page. We do a live on YouTube live there. So you can always find us on there Monday, 7:30 p.m. We do a whole host of different things. A lot of fun that we have. A lot of special guests and stuff, too. We also do our audio podcast, which you're listening to right now, on a whole host of streaming platforms such as Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Spreaker, TuneIn, iHeartRadio, and a multitude of others. If you can't find us on one, reach out to us on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, which we're also on. Let us know, and we'll make sure we get on that platform for you so you can find us and listen to us. But again, thank you so much. Nathan, it was a pleasure.
Hey, pleasure was all mine.
And thank you to the audience for listening. And if we don't see you out and about anytime soon, perhaps we will see you soon, maybe, cross our fingers, at the wonderful, very educational comic book shop. Thanks for listening, everybody.
This has been The Real Short Box. We'll see you at the comic shop. Thanks for listening.